Meet Russell Mad Dog Cox, a violent gunman, armed robber, prison escapologist, and Australia's most wanted man for 11 years.
Good evening, driver. Home, please.
Tonight we examine the life of Russell Cox, a highly intelligent, supremely skilled violent criminal. Through dramatised scenes, first-hand accounts and psychological analysis, we will follow his life from bike thief at age 9 to Australia's most wanted man.
Plenty of good crooks in this country would consider Russell Cox to be the greatest bank robber this country's ever seen.
Russell Cox is a bloody good bloke. He's a real Australian, last of the true bank robbers. He'd be the Banjo Paterson and Henry Lawson of bank robbers.
That was the best fun I ever had.
He certainly wouldn't hesitate to use violence. His record clearly shows that. I mean, he shot a man.
I said, keep still!
He had this reputation. He was an extremely active and violent criminal. He had to be quarantined from the community. He was mad.
Russell Cox was an armed hold-up man and escape artist who terrorised Australia during the 1970s and 80s. He was known in criminal circles for having a cool head, but he wasn't above using guns in his crimes. He became most famous for his escapes from custody and his chameleon-like ability to change his appearance while on the run. He kept his hideouts filled with heavy military-style weapons, bulletproof vests, disguises, and gas masks. His companion while he was Australia's most wanted man was the love of his life, Helen Dean, a nurse. Her skills came in handy. She is believed to have saved his life after he was shot in the thigh in a gun battle. When Cox escaped to Tingle, he was serving life for the attempted murder of a prison officer from an earlier escape attempt. The police expected to have him in custody in just a few days, but in fact, he wouldn't be caught for 11 years.
Russell Cox is the first prisoner ever to escape from Katingal, the new maximum security section here at Long Bay Jail. He's also regarded by police as potentially the most dangerous prisoner ever to escape.
In an interview for ABC TV in 2005, the Commissioner for New South Wales Corrective Services, Ron Woodham, showed just how Cox made his escape.
Russell Cox smuggled a small piece of hacksaw blade in a belt when he was out on escort. At court, he was given the belt and he swapped belts.
He'd climb up the grill work there
and do chin-ups on the bars on the roof, just take the blade out for a couple of saw cuts every day, put it back and just exercise.
Got to give him credit because he was able to climb up, hang on by one arm, saw with the other and do a little bit of sawing each day, cover up his work and then go back into the rest of his cell in Katingal. They all had separate cells. And then, as I said, when he finally got that bar cut through, he was able to escape.
Once onto the roof, Cox is scarpered over that, jumps over the edge of the concrete bunker, runs a short distance to a wire fence, about 4 metres again, scales that, runs another short distance, jumps across scales another 4 metre fence, jumps down there, all the time knowing that the officers within Katingal could not get out in time to catch him. And then he's had a couple of 100 metres to run to the brick perimeter wall around Long Bay, over that, and then he's off.
Another key to Cox's escape was his lifelong dedication to staying in peak physical condition.
Throughout his criminal career, the steady information that we always received was that he was an absolute fitness fanatic.
Every evening, Cox would run the length of one of his landings back and forwards, in part, one would assume, to get himself fit or fitter, but also with this escape plan in mind.
He then worked himself towards this very high level of fitness. It says a lot about his determination. and begrudgingly, I'd have to say, his guts to pull off such an escape.
Home, please.
Plenty of good crooks in this country would consider Russell Cox to be the greatest, if that's the right word, bank robber this country's ever seen. You've got a fellow who breaks out of the most secure jail in the country and then spends 11 years on the run committing major crimes up and down the eastern seaboard. Many people in the same line of business as Cox have previously said that they regard him as the armed robber's armed robber.
He had this reputation. He was an extremely active and violent criminal. He had to be quarantined from the community. And the best way to do that was to put him in jail. I might add, he was very good at getting out of jail, but that only created circumstances which put him back in jail for a longer period again. Society demands to be protected from these habitual criminals like Russell Cox. He was mad.
Russell Cox was the only peace freak yoga, yoga loving peace freak, hippie, gunman, bank robber, alleged killer I've ever met. You know, the only thing he has out of place is a touch of curry and chilli pepper in the vegetables. Doesn't smoke, doesn't drink. He was into all this sort of touchy-feely, you know, save the world stuff, you know. But he liked armed robberies and carrying guns.
The aura around Cox, I think, first of all, stems from the Katingle escape. No one had done it before. No one ever did it again. Then he spent 11 years on the run. This was Australia's most wanted man. There's really no doubt about that. Public enemy number one.
The man of many disguises was also a man of many names. Russell Cox was born Melville Peter Schnitzeling in Brisbane in 1949. His family nicknamed him Tim. It was not until he started his life of crime that Schnitzeling took on the name of Russell Cox. He grew up in Balmain, an inner-city suburb of Sydney. In the 1950s, Balmain was a tough, working-class suburb where men worked on the docks and often fell into crime. Cox first came to the attention of police at just 9 years of age when he was charged with stealing a bicycle. From there, he was in and out of juvenile facilities before finally being sent to an adult jail in 1966 for stealing a car. Cox was a bright kid, but evidently tempted by an easy dollar.
Mark Reed tells a story which may well be apocryphal, that Cox's life of crime began when he was about 10, when he'd won a raffle, the prize for which was a bicycle. And Cox had not been present for the draw of this raffle and had therefore been denied the prize, and in some sort of misguided retaliation had stolen himself a bicycle. Certainly court records show that Cox was before Asheville Children's Court for stealing three bicycles. A year later, he was committed to an institution, and within that year, still aged 12, was committed to an institution until he was 18. So he has spent the majority of his childhood in boys' homes.
Well, mate, he grew up in Balmain, so I mean, it wasn't the fashionable place then that it is now. So, he worked on the. I know he worked on the ships. I know he was highly regarded. He was pretty tough. I know that.
Also, remembering at this point, he was still going by his birth name of Melville Peter Schnitzeling, which doesn't sound anything like Russell Mad Dog Cox. He would have had a tough time looking after himself, I would imagine.
Forensic psychologist Stephen Barron believes Cox endured a tough childhood and had to use everything at his disposal to survive.
I suspect that Russell Cox was brutalised, was punished, I suspect he had a very difficult, rather challenging childhood, and he defended himself with the means he had at his disposal. I suspect he dealt with a system that was unforgiving towards him, and I felt he probably defended himself with those skills that he had.
Somebody who has a very strong intelligence but not opportunities in life looks for ways to get the advantage that they want. So I think that he would have been putting all of his energy and smarts into advancing himself in life. When he realised that he wasn't going to be able to climb the normal social rungs, he put his attention into advancing himself as fast as he could.
After spending time in a string of boys' homes, Peter Schnitzeling stepped up to the next level of violent crime and became an armed robber. And that's when he transformed himself into Russell Cox. Armed robbery is a violent crime. There's a risk of having to kill or be killed. For a young offender, armed robbery must have been an intimidating prospect. But the streets of Balmain offered Cox the opportunity to call upon experienced armed robbers to help him learn the trade.
That was gas! That was the best fun I've ever had!
You liked that, did you?
Yeah, hell yeah. It was unreal. My heart's beating out of my chest.
Yeah, I thought that Chinese bloke was going to start something.
So did I, mate. So did I. I thought he must have had a gun or something the way he was shifting around behind that pot plant. What a way to start the day, eh?
Sure beats the shit out of coffee.
Hey, how come you're so cool?
I'm not, man. I'm just buggered. Believe me, I love it. I need it.
Yeah?
Can oath, mate. You get hooked on it. I just can't run around it like you at my age.
You old man, eh?
Yeah, too right. But I love it as much as you do. That's why I keep showing up to do it.
Oh, fuck, I hope I'm still loving it at your age.
Yeah, I hope you're still around at my age.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll make enough to stop having to do it.
It's really about the money, isn't it?
Well, that's 25 grand there, I reckon.
Yep, at least. Reckon it could be more like 40.
40?
Good day's work. But I don't do it for the money. I'd do it even if I was a millionaire. Wouldn't you?
Like most professional criminals, Cox comes from a background of juvenile crime. In and out of boys' homes, in and out of children's courts, and then later on in and out of jails. Like most criminals, he would have picked up skills along the way in those institutions, but he does seem to have had some natural aptitude for robbing banks.
Armed robbery is a dreadful crime. The victims suffer from trauma associated with the terror of the event for the rest of their lives. For an offender like Cox, armed robbery can become more than a way of life. It's the pursuit of the thrill, and it quickly becomes addictive. Chopper Reed was never a bank robber, but found himself in similar situations.
It's a feeling that you tell people what to do and you see them doing it. It's good. You take the money. It's good. It's a good feeling. It's a magic feeling. You walk in there with a gun, you say, get on the ground, and 30 people are getting on the ground. Oh, that's good. Gee, it's marvellous. I've only got a gun in my hand. Look at that, all getting on the ground. That's good. Where's the money now? Yeah, it's good.
Armed robbers talk about the addictive quality of armed robbery, describe it as a drug-like experience, rush.
You like that, did you?
Yeah, hell yeah. It was unreal. My heart's beating out of my chest.
One can only speculate what causes that rush, whether it's about power, whether it's about the danger, the risk of going into a bank or facing an armed security guard, not knowing whether you're going to get out of there or not. It's obviously life-endangering behaviour.
The personalities of people who get involved in crime, quite often what they are is we call them sensation-seeking or risk-taking. They have low levels of natural arousal, and what they need is something that's going to give them a buzz. So crime, particularly crime that's risky, crime that's dangerous, or crime that also has good or big payoffs, tends to be, you know, quite buzzy. It does. It raises the adrenaline, and to that end, it meets a psychological need that they've got, which is to be sensation-seeking, to be risk-taking. So it is the buzz that in part is the payoff for doing the action.
you see criminals committing armed robberies when they don't necessarily need to financially. You take someone like Nettie Smith, who was in the 80s making millions of dollars distributing heroin, nonetheless felt the need to knock over armoured trucks for the thrill of it.
I said, don't move! Stay where you are!
Police believe that Melville Peter Schnitzeling, now named Russell Cox, was involved in a string of armed robberies in Sydney. As a result, he became known as Mad Dog. Many people believe Melbourne journalist John Sylvester is responsible for the nickname, but Roger Rogerson thinks otherwise.
We had two or three senior detectives. They had been at the CIB for years and lots senior to me, but they were very clever at coming up with colourful names. And I'm positive that one of these guys named Russell Cox Mad Dog. And of course, whether Russell Cox was as mad as what this guy thought he was, I don't know. I don't really know. I know he was a tough boy, tough man.
He might have done violent things in difficult circumstances. I'm not saying he shouldn't have been in jail for a lengthy time or paid the price for what he did. But he wasn't known amongst the police or amongst the criminal circle as Mad Dog Cox. He wasn't a mad dog. That was just someone's headline. Someone needed a headline in the media and they gave it to him.
I've got absolutely no idea how he became known as Mad Dog. I've never heard another criminal refer to him as that. Of course, Russell Cox is not his real name. Our inquiries in those years indicated that his correct name was, in fact, Peter Schnitzeling. But, of course, he abandoned that for reasons best known to himself, probably to protect his family.
Certainly the Mad Dog appellation would seem to be admitted to be media silliness. The man was clearly the opposite of mad and definitely not a dog. A cautious, careful, calm, calculating fellow who was nonetheless prone to gross acts of criminality.
After dropping the name Melville Peter Schnitzeling, it's believed that Russell Cox was responsible for a string of payroll robberies in Sydney's industrial southwestern suburbs and a raid on a Commonwealth Bank in Marrickville, where they took £30,000. The spate of armed robberies were finally brought to an end, and Cox was charged with a payroll hold-up at an electrical goods factory and sentenced to 14 years in jail. At a very early stage in his incarceration, Cox decided he was not going to serve his time. He spent every waking moment plotting escape. In 1975, Cox and two others, Marco Mottrick and Alan McDougall, attempted to escape from Long Bay Prison by holding a guard hostage, stealing guns from the prison arsenal and heading for the main gate.
So the three of these guys were all in the centre jail at Long Bay, the MRP.
Cox has had a Beretta pistol smuggled into the prison. Along with Mottrick and McDougall, he's used that pistol to overpower several guards at the main gate.
They got into the enclosure between the front door of the jail, the front gate, and the second gate. And they force the prison officer in charge of the guns to open the tank, and they then got access to some 38 revolvers.
Forced them into a room, they've then hijacked a 5-ton truck, taken another prison officer hostage.
Well, they stuck a gun in his neck and then, of course, forced the other guard to open the gate, the main gate.
By this time, officers from other parts of the jail are shooting at them. Cox is shooting back. During the exchange of gunfire, prison officers hit, Mottrick's hit, and Cox is hit. When they get to the main gate, a bread van coming into the prison collides with the truck. The three inmates leave the truck, again using this prison officer as a hostage and a human shield, and they're eventually overpowered.
One of the guards held at gunpoint by Cox, Steve Tandy, relived his terrifying ordeal in an ABC TV interview in 2004.
I was forced to the floor in the gate office area. Gun was eventually put at the back of my head. I was ordered to face the ground.
And what thoughts were going through your mind?
Well, I was of the opinion that myself or other colleagues would be shot.
Cox and one of his accomplices, Marco Motrick, were wounded during the escape. Prison authorities were slow to provide medical treatment, and this caused uproar amongst the general prison population.
Word of their predicament quickly spread throughout the Long Bay complex, and there were apparently threats of major rioting if they were not given treatments for what were fairly serious injuries.
So all of Long Bay threatened to riot or jack up unless they were given medical assistance, and they go down there and the doctors see them. I said, yeah, they've got to give them medical assistance. You can't just shoot people and just throw them in here. And so they saved their lives.
Cox was convicted of a string of offences, including the attempted murder of the prison guard and the attempted escape. He had a further 9 years added to his sentence. Russell Cox was not the sort of man to languish in a cell for 14 years. He pulled off the impossible and escaped from Katingal. Cox had begun his life on the run. He hooked up with a young nurse, Helen Eva Dean, and the two quickly fell in love. Imagine what life must have been like for Cox as his years on the run went on and on.
Shit. I need some sleep. This place is driving me nuts.
Shh, won't be the police.
Great, yeah, of course it won't. How the bloody hell would you know?
Well, why would it be?
Why wouldn't it be? You saw the bloody news tonight. They said they were closing in.
Yeah, but what are they going to say? We've got no idea.
They said I was spotted in Melbourne.
Which is far away from here.
So how do we know they didn't follow us here?
Darling, it's been a week and a half. I reckon we would have heard something by now if they knew where we were.
No. I've got a bad feeling. Come on, we're going.
It's 11:30. Where are we going to go?
I don't know, Mildura, Broken Hill.
Okay, great. Let's do it. But before we do it, we need to get some sleep.
No. Come on. We're going. I can't stay here for another second.
Russell Cox seems to have met Helen Dean about a year after his escape from Katingal. Her background, despite being related to Ray Bennett, the very serious Melbourne crook, seems to have been very middle class, very respectable. She certainly had far more opportunities in life than Cox. They've entered into a relationship that they maintained essentially for the 11 or so years that Cox was on the run. There's every chance that she did not know for some years exactly who she was shacked up with. And when she did learn that, it must have come as a hell of a shock. Up to that point, it'd be very hard for any bloke to explain why they're disappearing for days on end and, you're not meeting mum and dad.
Forensic psychologist Janet Hall believes that despite living on the run, normal relationship rules apply to Cox and Dean.
I think there's been quite a few women who fall in love with criminals, just as many women fall in love with ordinary men who are not necessarily winning in life, because women fall in love with a man's potential. But I think that if in this case that Helen has stayed by her man through thick and thin, he must be rewarding her with not just attachment, but with affection and love, you know, and for a length of time like that, you know, she would mostly have had good experiences with him. So she probably saw within him the man that could be trained, that could be educated, and that and would be, you know, a reliable and loving companion.
It really is one of the great love stories of Australian criminal history.
His escape from Katingal made him a walking headline. Sightings everywhere from Darwin to Perth were reported in the papers. The police pursued leads but came up with nothing. Life on the run was expensive, and with no legitimate way of earning money, Cox returned to armed robberies, including a massive armoured van holdup in Brisbane in 1982. The job put him back on the police radar. New South Wales police received information that Cox was living on a farm in the northern part of the state.
The closest we got to getting him was up near Mooloolambah, and we received information that he was on a farm there. And I took a team of guys up there, including some very smart surveillance guys, and we were quite satisfied that he was at this particular property.
Which was further helped by the fact that a former member of the Victorian Police who ran a business in the area had delivered items to this house, and he confirmed to us that he had sighted Cox sitting on a tractor at this particular property.
We liaised with the local police over that night and the next morning. Now, whether someone amongst those other police officers said something stupidly and someone picked it up in the town, by the time we got out of that farm the next day, he was no longer there.
By the time we put our job together and went in, unfortunately Cox had moved on because he was never one to stay in one place for too long.
But I'd say that he got wind of us being there and shot through. Now that was, as I said, that was close to Queensland, of course, Mooloolambah, and that's where he originally came from.
According to our inquiries, Russell Cox moved effortlessly across state borders from far north Queensland to northern New South Wales and regularly down to Melbourne, remaining one step ahead of the police. Always brazen, Cox was rumoured to have registered for the Dole and may have received unemployment benefits for at least part of his decade on the run.
It's very, very cheeky behaviour, but I understand that Cox was able to apply for successfully unemployment benefits. This was a time when government departments weren't as keen to share information. So while it's unlikely that Cox was putting in tax returns, it's very likely that he was getting the Dole.
For all his notoriety, few people knew what Cox actually looked like. The newspapers across Australia published his photo on their front pages, but these mugshots bore little resemblance to his appearance while on the run. Russell Cox was a master of disguise.
Russell Cox is the first prisoner ever to escape from Katingle, the new maximum security section here at Long Bay Jail. He's also regarded by police as potentially the most dangerous prisoner ever to escape.
He's a very, very violent man, and he's a person that we believe has been involved in some very vicious criminal activities.
Cox is a master of disguise and can alter his appearance at will. He's known to have studied theatrical makeup and can use wigs and glasses to hide his true physicality.
Despite a very wide police search, he hasn't been seen since.
If you take any of the known pictures of Cox, there's nothing particularly physically striking about him to start with, but he's also been able to change that fairly ordinary appearance, sometimes just with basic things like different haircuts, different facial hair, spectacles. There's also evidence, though, that he did spend some time studying or learning the art of disguise. You look at some of the material that was found at Mount Martha after he shot Ian Carroll, and that would suggest that he did spend some time preparing disguises.
The only time that I've seen Russell Cox in the flesh was sitting in the dock of a courtroom. And when you look at some of his photographs and some of the identity kits and what other people have told us, he had a remarkable ability, like Jockey Smith, to change his appearance by dyeing his hair, wigs, moustaches, gain weight, lose weight, that sort of thing.
It's an overused phrase, master of disguise, but it does seem appropriate when used to refer to Cox. To stay unrecognised for 11 years on the run is pretty extraordinary.
According to forensic psychologist Bob Montgomery, Cox's ability to disguise himself shows the strength of his personality.
Yeah, he's not changing his persona. He's showing you how clever he is. Look at me, I can walk past the coppers. I can thumb my nose and I can be right under their nose. And I'm so clever at disguising who I am. They won't see me, they won't catch me. So it's really reinforcing that grandiosity element of his personality. That's constant. And it's just, look how successful I am at tricking people, at escaping.
You know, if you talk to women, they put makeup on, they change the way they look, it doesn't diminish their identity, it gives them more options. I mean, much the same way disguises will do the same thing for him. It gives him options about who he is, but I wouldn't imagine that it alters very much his core sense of self. His core sense of self may be, I'm successful in eluding capture, this is how I do it, and so it promotes his identity rather than diluting it.
As much as a man on the run can be said to settle down, Cox found a home life with his partner, Helen Dean. Cox and Dean set up their hideout in plain view, a suburban home in Mount Martha in Melbourne South. The home was owned by Melbourne armed robber Ian Carroll. Cox used Melbourne's criminal elite to assist in his armed robberies. His lover, Dean, was sister-in-law to notorious criminal Ray Chuck Bennett. And Bennett was happy to introduce Cox around to his fellow armed robbers, including Ian Carroll. Carroll and Cox had a spectacular falling out in the Mount Martha hideout. Shots were fired by both men. Cox sustained a bullet wound to his thigh, but Carroll was less fortunate. He was shot twice and died.
Ian Revel Carroll was one of the most... one of the busiest armed robbers in Melbourne. He was into everything that opened and shut. He had a ton of dash.
January 1983, Cox turns up at Mount Martha at a house occupied by Ian Carroll, former great bookie robber and a very serious crim. It appears that that house was, and it's a fairly plain suburban home, but was being used as a hideout by Cox.
They were most probably two of the best armed robbers and best planners of armed robberies that we've seen for a long time.
They become involved in an argument which leads to gunfire. Both of them are shot. Cox shoots Carroll dead.
Russell Cox made headlines in 1977 by becoming the only man ever to escape from the supposedly escape-proof Katingle High Security Unit at Long Bay Jail. He's wanted for questioning about the murder in January of Melbourne painter and docker Ian Carroll at this house in Mount Martha on the Mornington Peninsula. A large cache of weapons was found at the house, one of the biggest illegal gun hauls ever made in Victoria.
Police who've searched that property, as well as finding Carroll's body, have found everything that a busy armed robber could possibly need.
In the ceiling was this virtually cabin trunk, just full of equipment, just in case they did march on Moscow and things went crook.
Handguns, shotguns, assault rifles, submachine guns, balaclavas, boiler suits, security guard uniforms, safes presumably to practice on, lifts of police radio frequencies, printed matter about disguises, wig making, theatrical cosmetics, a veritable Bunnings for bank robbers.
After his recapture, Russell Cox was charged with the murder of Ian Carroll, but the charge didn't make it past the committal proceedings and was dismissed. There wasn't any evidence to substantiate putting him on trial for murder. Police believe that Cox's lover, Helen Dean, used her nursing skills to save Cox's life after he was shot by Carroll, possibly removing the bullet in the house in Mount Martha.
Fucking prick Carroll. After everything I've done for him, and he pulls a fucking gun on me.
I'm just gonna have to bite the bullet, aren't I?
You have to get it out first.
Stay still.
Just hurry up.
All right. God. Oh, I got it. That's your problem right there.
It's still warm.
Hey, eat the
never jumped the gun. I'm going to stay up.
Nick one, pearl one.
He had a lady there with him who was a registered nurse. They had a cabin trunk full of equipment for anybody that was shot, stabbed, bashed, or any physical violence on them. They could have been treated. There was injections, hypodermic syringes and everything. A complete set of almost a walk-around hospital kit there.
Helen Dean was a trained nurse and was apparently able to go above and beyond those skills, removing the bullet in Cox's leg and providing him with all of the treatment he needed. Apparently he was up and literally running the next day.
After the shootout with Ian Carroll, Nurse Dean tended to Cox's wounds. Cox didn't waste time recuperating. Within a day of being shot, he returned to his regular morning job, again in plain sight. In Melbourne, Russell Cox was able to blend in. People saw him jogging the streets, yet they had no idea the person they were looking at was Australia's most wanted man.
Just a cappuccino, thanks, Macca.
What?
Cappuccino, thanks, man.
Look here, Jimmy. So what about this Cox bloke, eh?
Who's that?
You haven't heard. Russell Cox, the mad dog. Coppers haven't got a clue. He's been running now for 7 years. Ever since he escaped from that slammer in Sydney.
No, I don't know, Macca. What slammer?
Katingle, in Sydney. They build this jail that you can't break out of, and he breaks out. Unbelievable.
How'd he do it?
Nobody knows. But he did it. 3 years it was open, and they closed it down. He's been on the run now for 7 years.
Well, maybe he just got lucky.
It's not about luck, Jimmy. This bloke's good. He's a master of disguise. That's what they say here. He could be right under the copper's nose and they wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, some of those coppers aren't too bright.
That's true. Most coppers wouldn't know if a tram was up their arse until a passenger rang the bell. Huh? You know, he must be pretty fit, huh? It says here he ran for 4 miles. The coppers didn't even get close.
Maybe he's a jogger.
You reckon you'll give him a run for his money, eh, Jimmy? Yeah, perhaps it's a good thing they didn't catch him. This bloke would do anything if he was cornered. He's not the sort of bloke to be worried about giving the coppers a bit of curry. Never corner a mad dog.
Yeah. Mm. I best push off. How much for the coffee?
Don't worry about it. I'll know.
Cheers, Macca. Must be my lucky day.
Despite being wanted by the police in at least 3 states, Cox has described his life on the run as being relatively normal. He's in a stable relationship. He's in some-time employment. He's also robbing banks. But it was only those times when he was conscious of police being in the street or he thought he was perhaps being followed that he was brought back to the reality that he was a fugitive, a dangerous man on the run.
It's very hard to be a successful criminal if you have a strong sense of dread. I think that one of the premier requirements to be a successful criminal is not to feel anxiety. I mean, I think that's one of the classic kinds of diagnostic symptoms, that people who are successful in crime who are antisocial actually have an absence of anxiety. So I don't see that that is unsurprising. It would have been more surprising had he experienced dread than if he hadn't.
No one would be able to live, live for 11 years being constantly on edge like that. It makes a certain amount of sense that he was able to feel relatively relaxed a lot of the time that he was on the run.
Cheers, Macca. Must be my lucky day.
While the type of life Cox led while on the run seems difficult to fathom, he seems to have chosen a path that was as close to a normal, everyday life as was possible.
Well, why wouldn't you want to have a normal life? I mean, that's all part and parcel of the disguise issue as well. You have a normal life, but you know deep down who you are. It's all part of the game. He would have accepted a whole range of other behaviours as being okay for him. So he'd have an intuitive sense of what, you know, normal people did, but he would also know that he was quite different because he was, you know, antisocial and good at it.
That said, Cox was obviously always ready to react if he thought he had been recognised and faced arrest.
In 1988, his luck finally ran out. He was arrested in a shootout with police in the car park of Doncaster Shopping Town, a shopping centre in Melbourne's eastern suburbs. Cox was in the company of Raymond Denning, a violent armed robber and a fellow prison escapee. A security guard had noticed the two men sitting in their car behaving suspiciously. A huge payroll delivery was due, and Cox and Denning had planned to take it at gunpoint. The police were called and arrived in force. Denning jumped from the vehicle with his hands up, but Cox would not go so quietly. He attempted to flee and drove his car directly at police. They fired at the vehicle and peppered it with full-bore shot. Cox crashed his car. At first, the police had no idea they had captured Australia's most wanted man. As Cox got out of the car at gunpoint, he told police, "You blokes won't believe who you've caught today." The police couldn't believe their luck. They took Cox back to the police station and even had photographs taken with him with their arms around him. For the first time in 11 years, Russell Cox was back in custody.
The two prize catchers, criminals Cox and Denning, were taken into custody just before 2 o'clock this afternoon. Police had responded to a tip that people wearing balaclavas had been seen in two cars that were following an armoured cash delivery van. They intercepted Denning's car and found two sawn-off .22 rifles and balaclavas. But Cox, after seeing the police, tried to escape through the car park. A policeman armed with a shotgun fired three shots at Cox's car, shattering the windscreen and hitting the door and boot. Cox then lost control of the car, colliding with a brick wall. It was only after Cox was taken to CIB headquarters that police realised the significance of the arrest.
Russell Cox had been on the run for 10 years, 8 months, 19 days, without anyone being able to track him down. Ray Denning did it in a week.
Detective Sergeant Ron Pickering, who arrested Snitzeling, said part of the prosecution case would involve evidence from Raymond John Denning.
The court was told Denning had sought and been given an indemnity against prosecution for crimes he committed in Queensland in return for evidence he would give in this case.
There have been claims that Denning's escape from Goulburn Prison had been allowed by authorities in the hope that Denning would lead them to Cox. Police refute this and acknowledge that Cox's recapture in Melbourne was a fluke.
Some people will tell you that they're almost relieved when they get caught because that gives them the opportunity to make a change that they can't make otherwise. One of the things that often happens, though, is as you get older, you lose the fire. You get tired of all the running around. You burn out of those risk-taking, sensation-seeking kinds of behaviours. The other thing about it, which might be also important for someone such as he, is that he has a long-term committed relationship that he might want to sustain, and some recognition that it's as hard to sustain that if he's always in jail.
Russell Cox was charged with a string of armed robberies, but he was acquitted on the murder of Ian Carroll after a Melbourne magistrate ruled that it was not clear who shot first. His partner Helen Dean went to prison for 6 months after being caught outside the courtroom with a pen gun in a handbag. Cox served time for many of his armed robberies, first in Victoria, then Queensland, and finally in New South Wales. In all, Cox would serve 16 more years in prison. In jail, the former escapologist became a model prisoner and actively mentored young offenders. Russell Cox did not want these young men to follow his path.
Russell Cox.
Yeah, I know what your name is.
What's yours?
Jacob.
That's all?
Yeah, I don't have a nickname.
Nickname?
Yeah, I don't have one yet, but I want one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Have a seat, Jacob. Why do you want a nickname?
Well, you know, you're the fox, right? Everyone knows you're the fox. People know who you are.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I've never called myself the fox.
Boo.
I swear, I've never introduced myself to anyone as the fox. It's what other people call me.
Yeah, it's a cool nickname, bud.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, like, you're cunning. You're smart.
Everyone respects you.
Thanks, mate. Now, you want a cup of tea?
No.
How old are you, mate?
19.
How old do you reckon I am?
About 50 or something.
Close enough. You know, when they first put me in here, you were busy growing your first set of teeth.
So how smart and cunning am I?
Yeah, but, I mean, people respect you.
Not everyone. Only the fuckwits in here. There's not a lot of competition. You want to die in jail?
From Cox's arrest in 1988 until his eventual parole in 2004, he appears to have been the classic model prisoner. He's decided that he's going to have to do this time. Cox would have been respected regardless by fellow inmates, but he seems to have used that notoriety to try to convince younger prisoners that there was no future in pursuing a life of crime and that there was no point spending your life in jail.
In making its decision, the parole board heard evidence that Russell Cox had been a keen participant in prison programs to deter young offenders from a life of crime. According to the board, in the case of the inmate Russell Cox, there is powerful evidence that he is intent on leading a normal, lawful community life.
Paying back is the phrase used. He's paying back, he's giving back, so that there is some kind of meaningfulness to what he's done in the past that he can give back to the community that will prevent or make better some of the things that he has done.
You know, when they first put me in here, you were busy growing your first set of teeth.
So how smart and cunning am I?
I think it's a fantastic result that Cox was able to be educated and find a compassion, particularly through the youth program. And that indicates to me that he was not the sociopath that could not have empathy with anybody else, but that once he finally had nowhere else to go, that he could relate to people, that he could live a life where he followed society's expectations. And indeed, to his credit, I believe he's doing that.
Blokes like that, in my view, if they're given opportunities, are going to be able to make something of themselves. I don't think I know anyone that really wants a life where you're constantly on the, you're looking over your shoulder wondering whether you're going to be alive in 5 minutes' time. It's a dog's life, you know? And I couldn't see that Cox wouldn't make something of himself.
Even the guard that Russell Cox had held at gunpoint during his failed attempt to escape from Long Bay Prison in 1975 believed Cox had served his time.
As a prison officer, Stephen Tandy knows what it's like to have a gun pointed at his face by an inmate desperate to escape. But that hasn't stopped him pushing for the release of the man who did just that to him more than 25 years ago.
Been what's termed as a model prisoner. He's never been a management problem. I think he's a much more mature person, a much wiser person.
Authorities say Cox will move to Queensland to work as a builder's labourer and cleaner. They say he will be watched closely.
On the 8th of December 2004, Russell Cox was released from prison. The escapologist had done his time. Amazingly, Cox could not be convicted of his masterpiece, his escape from Katingle. The authorities had lost his prison file. When it was first built, the New South Wales government had not taken the proper steps to establish the legal status of Katingle as a prison. A judge ruled that Cox could not have escaped from a jail that did not legally exist. It was the perfect epilogue to the story of Russell Cox, one-time tough nut, now a reformed man. Cox and the love of his life, Helen Dean, married during his long stretch in prison. They remain together to this day.